Holy cannoli, Austin, it's been a minute, but we're here, and we're here for the people. We are here for the people. How excited do you think somebody's going to be looking at their podcast player tomorrow morning and being like, oh, shit, that's right, I do listen to that. And then they're going to be like, I'll push that down. There's an episode of All Chat right now with Gork, and I should really listen to that first because that's the star power. But, like, after finish listening to that.
Who's still listening to this podcast after 2.5 months of inactivity?
That can't be accurate. I know that
January 8th.
I know that it might be accurate. Yeah. You know, I think that it's like a surprise and delight moment. Like we're gonna make somebody's day tomorrow. Upwards of two people, and then I'm gonna look at the retention graph and I'm gonna be like, Austin, oof. But it's been a minute, friend. How are you?
I'm good. It's so we had a lot of things happen,
dude.
That resulted in our schedules not really lining up. I went to Dream League recently, so that took like a solid 3 to 4 weeks out of the dealio. You've been working a lot. In fact, you got a promotion. Oh. Congratulations. Everybody congratulate Joey on his promotion.
Dude, that's...
Yay!
Thank you. It's a wee bit wild to say that that's a real excuse for not hanging out, but it has been a real excuse for not hanging out. I told myself this year that I was going to make a really serious effort with, like, my whole work-life thing. I know that it's, you know, a topic mm-hmm. that's come up. Some people know about it. Some unhealthy habits. And in January, I felt like, you know what? I think I have something under control. I feel like at zen and at peace. And then my boss decided to quit/retire, and the conversation was like, well, Joey, I mean, you said you wanted this job, so, like, I don't know, like, are you just gonna, like, do it? And I'm like, yeah, of course, put me in, coach. And all of the little bits of progress that I've made on any semblance of work-life fixing has been I think the word for it is fucked.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty understandable. You are stepping up, so there is some expectation that you're going to be doing some more work to get with the program. But once you get into, so what does the new job entail?
So
that your old job did not.
So this is kind of a little bit crazy, and I'm still trying to, like, figure out how to explain it without sounding like too weird, because it almost feels like I'm bragging a little bit, but I have 19 employees underneath me on three different continents. So, like, I am essentially responsible for all of the production and content development. Everybody who works in that, like in the creative or the producer field, for the entirety of Team Liquid across the globe. So not just in Los Angeles. I'm waking up early way more than I ever was to, you know, hang out with Europe. I manage people directly in Europe and Brazil. Like, I'm responsible for watching literally everything that goes out on every channel, and, like, also developing some of these people and, like, planning strategy. So it's all stuff that, you know, I have been dabbling in and doing a little bit before. But now there's, like, nobody else to pass the buck off to. I'm getting, like, mm-hmm. like a crash course in global management. And it's really cool and really rewarding, and I'm really happy. But my schedule has been kind of fucked. I've been alternating, like, going to bed at 9 p.m. one night and then 2 a.m. the next night. And then, dude... staying up late because so like I feel like I'm trying to prove to everybody and myself that I could have been doing this a while ago, and like I'm very apt at what's going on, but in doing that I am like not allowing myself to falter much, so I'm really putting a lot into it. And then mix that with the fact that I've been a very, very good boy and actually been doing the whole fitness thing the way that I want to be doing for the last couple of months, means that any semblance of free time I have is either, like, playing Persona or at the gym, and sometimes both at the same time. So, dude, it's been a... I'm just hanging out with my friends.
Okay, so does this... So it sounds like you're doing a lot more management.
Totally.
Does that mean a lot less creative stuff now for you?
Yes.
And do you miss that?
Yes, by design, and I'm not sure yet. So I think that... Oh, God, this is probably, like, painfully boring for some people, but I think, like... 10 year from now, me is probably somebody who is doing very minimal creative and like advising on creative, but really good management. I think that that is actually where my skill set is a little bit better. So I think that I'm indexing into probably what is the future for me, while still being able to do a little bit of creative, a little bit of projects and some amount of producing, directing, but really only focusing that on what I want to be doing. So now I have the luxury of really just like, instead of, I think last year when we ran the numbers, I did like 120 projects throughout the year in some way, shape or form. And this year it'll probably look like 12 to 20. And it'll just be the things that I want to do while delegating everything else to everybody else and helping them with their stuff and making it better. Like, I'm still going to touch a lot of things, but just won't be like, you know, doing it totally myself. And I don't know yet if having that creative responsibility fall off a cliff is going to make me feel like some kind of crazy unfulfilled artist. Just shoot me in the head for saying that, but we'll see. Like that's probably a thing for me to check in with myself in August.
So what is it that you want to do? Like the project, you said a certain number of projects. Is that an idea thing, or is that is stuff in Los Angeles thing, or is that a game thing? Like, are you just going to do some Dota projects since that's what you know best, or what?
I think what's probably going to happen is that I'm going to continue to remain in control of most of the Dota stuff, because I think that I'm still the person who is just the expert there, and also it's what I care the most about. Like, I enjoy hanging out with, you know, Aiden and Boxy and Will and all of them, right? So that's not going to change, and that is almost like it is fun. It doesn't feel like much work. So it's probably like working on Dota projects or working on really big things like the giant keyboard video we did last year. The things that are going to take like big swings with big budgets. So if I just do that, and then if I never have to make, and I hope none of my coworkers hear this, if I never have to make a fucking Alienware monitor ad again, you know, I'll be fine. Like, I'm not going to lose sleep over not making like a 30-second Twitter spot for a secret lab chair. Like, you know, I'll be okay. So. That's kind of where I'm at with it. You know, focus on Dota, focus on making the team better, focus on making the team happier, and kind of going from there.
And you're doing this in the midst of an esports recession.
People keep on saying esports winner, but have you seen those Valorant bundle skins? Like, I mean, they're making a lot of money.
Are they at all comparable to CSGO stickers?
I don't know the hard data on that, and if I did, I'd have to check myself before I actually said that publicly, but I bet that in due time, like pretty soon, that math will come out. Right now, Riot started talking about that, and they said that like Paper Rex and Sentinels, Paper Rex being a Southeast Asian team, has been selling the most of the skins, and they've been going like really, really well. I think that our numbers are also pretty okay. I don't know if they constitute sticker sales. Sticker sales are like in the millions of dollars for teams most of the time, every major, which happens twice a year. So when your team, which you designed to have like four or five superstars on it, decides to not qualify for the major and they're not in Copenhagen right now, it's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, that's it sounds about right, man. You know what the weird part is? Like, you have these things that create direct revenue for teams that Dota doesn't have.
What do you mean? They put stickers in the TI stuff, and it totally made a lot of money for a lot of people, right? Like, you saw your own revenue, right? Like, show me the voice lines and shit. I don't know.
I mean, it's a nice bonus for me. I am not an organization. I think the nice little bonus for me is a completely unnoticed error on the checkbook for an organization like Liquid. So I think we're talking about different scales here. So in that regard, I was thinking about this recently. You know, like there are actually orgs coming back into Dota. Mm-hmm. And salaries are apparently doing all right, despite this esports winter and stuff like that, and despite Dota not actually creating direct revenue, because it's a top esport that is in an open ecosystem and is therefore a part of Riot. And Riot has their whole, like, mm-hmm. you know, orgs, like they have a prize for organization. So all of a sudden these orgs are picking up StarCraft players again, or they want a Dota team, or, you know, and it's funny how, like, esports winter hits and, like, somehow, some way, team player salaries still are not affected. Like, I'm getting squeezed on my talent rate, but, like, you know.
I think so. I think they have been affected a little bit disproportionately in four different games, because my understanding is that the League of Legends ecosystem has corrected a little bit. A little bit.
That was way over the top, right?
But correct. Yeah, you're talking about what was probably the most ridiculous, and they're coming back down to earth. I've heard that Dota is still, like, in a healthy spot for players, which is almost certainly because of the Esports World Cup.
We've
touched on that before, like, you know, where like, oh hey, G2's coming in, why are they merging with IG for this Dota team? It's Esports World Cup. Why is Mouse coming in to pick up a Dota team? It's Esports World Cup. Why is Leviathan, and who else has come into Dota recently? At least those three.
Can't remember. There was, like, Boom was switched over to South America and weird stuff like that, but yeah, not that many people are interested in North America still.
No, I mean, why would you be?
Yeah, I mean, who's going to take that spot away from Shopify Rebellion? It's really only now, so what's the point of sponsoring the third shot at the title sort of deal? And Shopify, even worse, Shopify hasn't been good enough to actually secure themselves an invite. So they're hogging the qualifier spot, which they did yet again for Dream League, this last Dream League. So it's like the worst of all situations for NA.
They
basically
need the invite so that another NA team can qualify and get in, and so they just don't get the qualifier.
And then some other team has a chance. They're like, oh, it's just, we just have to beat Nouns, right? And then you can build up that rivalry sort of thing and maybe get a team sponsorship sort of deal. But yeah.
I don't know. The sponsorship deals for Dota seem like, if sold correctly, they could be a bit lucrative, because I've kind of seen what's coming up on the calendar this year, and it seems almost intimidatingly packed. Like, there's a lot of events going on.
Yeah, we'll see what the quality of those events are, though. Just because there's events filling out the calendar. I hate this about the Dota ecosystem, man. In order, fucking TI set this goddamn bar where you need at least $1 million in prize pool to throw a fucking Dota tournament, right? So now, we might just have tournaments that are coverage-wise, show-wise, kind of dog shit, but are kind of tier one because they have tier one teams. And I feel like that's just so bad. I feel like that's like, it will affect the scene over time. And we're gonna go back to the minor major, like, nothing was special, there was just shit tons of games. I don't really care so much about that, but I feel like there is going to be a little bit of that fatigue when you have those matchups without the good show part.
So, you know, so what's going to happen for like Dota viewership is kind of, I think, what you're getting at. And also what I'm curious about, because what feels like a substantial event at this point? Is it just ESL events and everything else is kind of whatever? Is it just Birmingham and whatever, like Kuala Lumpur, whatever, you know, it is?
Yeah, there's already like some questionable things that I'm basically seeing. One of these things is, so I've heard some stuff about some of the tournaments coming up that doesn't feel great, that, you know, maybe they're just going to be remote broadcast stuff. There is the PGL. PGL just did their whole thing where they said they were going to do their closed qualifiers. Mm-hmm. They are giving those rights away to casters instead of paying them for the coverage, which I don't blame any tournament organizer for doing that. If I was a tournament organizer, I would seriously consider doing that. I just don't think that's good. I don't think it's good for the ecosystem, but it's understandable, right? I think closed qualifier coverage is like usually not worth the effort or money that you put into it, so better just to pawn it off to somebody else, you know?
I mean, if Gork or whoever gets those rights, like, do can they turn a positive ROI? I guess they'd be streaming anyway, so it doesn't really matter for them.
If you're, and that's going to be the weird thing about it, is that if you are already a big enough channel, then yes, it's worth it for you, and you'll probably make more money. Maybe some tier one casters would be able to get like kind of equitable. I don't know. We'll see. I'm not going to be doing one of those. I did put in a thing after talking to Owen about it. I wasn't going to do it because I didn't think it was that good for the ecosystem, but Owen wanted to try it out, so I was like, well, whatever. I put one in, but I'm not going to end up doing it. And we'll see what kind of return Owen or whoever gets it, and what kind of money they make off of it compared to what they would do rates wise. And then anybody lower than that on the totem pole, I think, is not going to make. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll make the same amount with lower rates and stuff like that. Maybe it's going to be equal, but I think they'll look at it as an exposure sort of deal, right? Like, you get a shit ton of viewers for your channel, even if they never stick around. Like, even if 95% of them don't stick around, you know, you can kind of say, well, 5% of them stick around, it might be worth it for you, right?
Yeah.
So, maybe. I don't think it is. I don't think it will. I'll be honest. I think people are going to delude themselves into thinking that this is going to give them a break when, frankly, I don't think it'll have that effect at all. But
it could incentivize like the Owens or the even like the Koikovas of the world, who already have some people who would show up, and then if they're just shamelessly spamming the ad button between games.
Yeah.
Like I wonder I wonder what the audience reaction to that is. Because I think that in order to just make it worth your time, depending on how you're valuing your time, you have to be like, hey guys, we're between games, I'm gonna press the ad button 8 times, like, thanks for hanging out.
Also, people are more like nobody really subs to tournament channels, right?
Yeah.
But if you're watching a caster's personal stream, you're way more likely to spend your Twitch Prime sub there and stuff like that. Maybe some of those people, you know, activate a sub, and even if they don't go back and watch you after you're done with the tournament, maybe they leave their sub on, you know? Maybe they forget about it. That happens all the time. That's why subscription services work in the first place. That's why gym memberships exist.
Because humans are dum-dums.
Yeah, so, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Because I know that there is currently, if you're a tournament organizer that is not ESL, especially if you are a non-English tournament organizer, you don't have a studio to pass off your English broadcast to. Mm-hmm. That means you have to be in charge of it. You have to hire people directly. And right. And that's just like, it creates all kinds of, you need extra people, you need extra employees to be able to handle that. And then you have to hire people directly and you have to fly them in potentially to a studio setup and all this sort of jazz, right? It adds a lot of work, adds a lot of money, where you would probably rather just pay some studio to do that. But there's no English studio anymore, right? We're all independent contractors. There is no centralized location. There's no centralized studio that we'd work out of. There's not even like a Moonduck sort of thing. So that is kind of a problem. If there was an English studio, I think it would get hired for potentially a lot of things, just because it would be the only gig in town sort of deal. Where the tournament organizers are like, I don't want to, like the thing about the Bet Boom guys, right? They specifically hired Jenkins and Effie for their first round, mm-hmm. and that's it. And then their more recent one, they hired like a few casters. But I don't think they want to be doing a separate production. I think they want to do their Russian production that makes a shit ton of money off of Russian betting. And the English stream doesn't make them any money. They don't want to fucking do it, you know? So I think they would like to pass that off. I think that ESB very likely would like to pass off their production off to an English studio.
Yeah. Are we missing a business opportunity here? Like, what's
maybe, but
like what's stopping us from renting a house with a fiber connection, making the living room a set, and then like having a couple bedrooms for whoever needs to come in and then cast with?
You just want to recreate Beyond the Summit, basically?
I mean, it is a small scale business model that could work if someone is looking to just pass off a contract for English casting.
Yeah, you know what? One of the problems, Slex always made this point about Moonduck. One of the problems with Moonduck is that you put a group of casters together, and one problem is somebody has to give up their job. Somebody has to give up their job to actually run the thing, and nobody actually wants to do that.
That's
right?
Why I can run the thing, because I don't.
You already
casting.
Have a job, motherfucker. You don't need any more work. You need less work. You need to stop working so much.
There's a business opportunity. I'm hearing a business opportunity.
I mean, I would love for you to do that. Absolutely. I would love that. But you have a job, motherfucker. Like, I cannot in good faith encourage you to do anything like that.
We're going
to
offline about this.
Uh-huh. I'm just saying there's like some weird, there's some weird things going on with the space right now that I've kind of noticed. Right, like the team thing I was pointing out, like the lack of an English studio, where esports is downsizing and English broadcast isn't really worth very much, but it's still the main broadcast in a way. So I don't know. There's some weird stuff going on with the scene right now. Some weird growing or shrinking pains from esports going down and Valve dropping the DPC mm-hmm. at the same time. So, and they'll like, obviously the weird vacuous space that's left and what fills it and what apparently fills it is apparently a lot of tournaments, but like nobody's actually going to make sure that these tournaments are going to be good. So this year might be a total shit show on tournaments. Maybe it's going to be perfectly fine. You know, maybe everything will be, all of these tournaments will be great. None of them will be shit shows. But like, I feel like very likely a lot of people are trying to throw tournaments together. And I think there's going to be some bumpy roads ahead.
It seems like this is better than the alternative of the DPC being canned and then us going, oh my God, nobody's hosting Dota events. So
oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, Like Riyadh does a lot to save Dota esports, as we've already talked about with the team thing, right?
And other esports. It creates a whole
tournament circuit and other esports, but I think Dota is definitely... Dota is one of the bigger esports and also had like the... Well, I guess... I mean, Overwatch is much smaller, but Overwatch had the same... even worse, I guess, precipitous drop mm-hmm. of like their official scene just blowing up and then, you know, a huge space. So Dota, I guess, didn't have it as worse as that, but Dota's also a bigger game and bigger esport. But I guess they're kind of in similar spaces. The official deal is gone and then you need something to fill it. And there's a bunch of Saudi money that comes in. There's a bunch of Qatar money that comes in. And fills up the space. A lot of money that is thrown around to try and take up the space, but there isn't the organizations and structure set in place to make that money mm-hmm. work good right away, you know?
Yeah. It's also, it's such like an advantageous time for the Saudis or anybody else to come in with that big coin purse of money when everybody else is just generally hurting and there is general chaos and layoffs and teams closing and salaries going down. And then they're like, hey, but like, what if we do the Esports World Cup? And then everyone's like, I mean, I guess so.
Yeah,
it's kind of working well for all parties. The only people who you know, which is a camp that I still kind of fit into a little bit, like some people who have some semblance of questionable morals around that, they're still not super stoked about that, and I think that's a losing battle right now with esports and with golf and with F1.
Yeah, very much a losing battle.
I mean, but we still get to watch our games happen, right? So that's fun.
Shit. I just want to watch Dota. I have to think about politics. I just want to watch Dota.
There's no video game. There's no politics in my video games. Let's go watch Kick. Big Aiden Ross fan over here. I don't know. I think that the players are going to be fine, but I think that they're going to be burnt out come TI. At least people who are playing a bunch of events. And I'm more interested in people kind of... I think teams are going to be okay, relatively speaking. I think that they're making the investments, knowing what's going on. I'm more interested in, like, your perspective and the talent perspective, because the area where I feel the least confident in, like, a successful year is for all the talent.
Yeah, we are always the... Not always, but I think we're... The group that gets squeezed first. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we get squeezed the most, but I think when you're looking to make cuts, the talent is by far not the largest expense, right? But it is one that you can tackle without pissing off a lot of people, right? Because talent aren't going to like lay you on blast publicly, because then that might just burn that bridge, and you never get hired again. Right. It's also like, but if you burn the players, well, they can lay you on blast, right? It's not like you're not going to invite the players. They can. And even if you didn't, like, that'd be like PGL when they banned OG, right? They just go through the qualifier and get there anyway, right? Like, tournament organizers, you need the teams. You need, in particular, certain teams that draw a lot of viewership to be there. So it's like you can't really squeeze them, right? You're not going to touch the prize pool because that's what attracts the teams in the first place.
I feel like my first place got like 10% of the prize pool. Think of what you can do with 10% of those prize pools. 5%.
$50,000
would go a long way.
Similar argument. I've made a similar argument. And there are some reasons for it that I don't think I can talk about, but let's say if you're PGL or ESB, right? Mm-hmm. You can't compete with Riyadh. Not really.
No.
Right? You can't compete with that kind of draw, that kind of money, that kind of prize pool. So everything that is under Riyadh, everything that gets you to Riyadh, teams are going to attend, right? Kind of no matter what the prize pool is. They somehow the prize pool is still like mega high. You could have it for like $100 and all the top teams would still go to Dream League, right? Because they're trying to get the points to go to Riyadh, which is where all the money is. But they're going to go all of that. Then which tournaments are you? I don't think you want to go to all of them, right? You can't go to every tournament. I think that is throughout the year because you want to do well at Riyadh, so you don't want to be super burnt out. So then if you're then ESB and PGL slash Perfect World or whatever, they're like competing, you know, over the same limited team pool.
Mm-hmm.
Like come to my tournament, you know. I have no inside information on this, but I just imagine that is like kind of a competition, right? So you need a high prize pool to be able to get them there. So that kind of maintains a high level because you have to have those teams there in the first place. And then, you know, the show just kind of goes by the wayside, which I always think is bad because like I know I'm talent, so therefore like the show is important to me and obviously it affects my budget, but I also just think it's I don't know, it's just watching Gaming Gladiators versus Team Liquid on Dota TV, like I can enjoy that, I like that is perfectly fine for me, but I think as esports as a product, you want something more than just watching that game in Dota TV.
That's not right? Fine for Intel, you know?
Yeah. So, like, my always concern is, like, you're spending all this money just to attract the teams, and you're just like, wait, what's left? And then you don't put enough into budget into the shows, and then that ends up sucking, and then I think you lose the viewership that, like, might watch, but won't guaranteed watch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Again, the Liquid versus Gaming Gladiators, I'm a hardcore Dota person. I'm going to watch that on Dota TV. It doesn't matter what, if there isn't even a stream, I'll watch it, you know? But the not-so-hardcore Dota fan, like, they're not going to watch a bad show, I think. So you lose the viewership that you should be actually trying to collect.
So I probably
focus the most on.
I probably fall somewhere like 10% below the most hardcore Dota fan. I'm not really watching games in client almost ever. I'm watching productions, but that's also because I'm interested in the productions and I have friends who are, you know, just on broadcast and all that jazz, right? The only thing that I have really watched this year has been some, but not all of Dream League. And I don't know if I'm supposed to, like, not admit this or something, but I watched a little bit of the Russian tournament just because I was really curious what was going on. I watched.
Did you want to see if you could see Putin? Is he going to be on the show? Sure enough, he was on the show. I heard about that beforehand. It was like, yeah, dude, they're like, the players are... They're going to be in the same spot that Putin is. I'm like, what the fuck? Wait, what?
Wild.
Yeah.
That
happened.
That show had the craziest graphics.
Yeah. I remember I made a joke to somebody. I was like, there's like, this is such a weird timeline. Like, we live in a world where, like, potentially, your players might witness firsthand Putin get assassinated. That might be a thing that happens, you know?
God.
Shit, that's wild.
We
might have already made this entire discussion 2.5 months ago. I don't remember.
So we talked about that tournament happening on the last show that we did, and we were both like just kind of confused, if I remember correctly, about the state of it actually happening because, you know, teams didn't want to go. Like, I remember that, like, people maybe were maliciously putting teams on the Liquipedia page, which caught some flack for some rosters. There was a point in time where I was looking
Wait, really?
There was a point in time where I was looking at it where it said Nouns was participating. And it said
I think that was a real thing.
That was a real thing?
I think so.
There's no way someone would say yes to that. There's no way that Gutter can go to Russia.
I mean, I don't think...
Impossible.
Than necessarily like, I don't know if necessarily everybody understood what they signed up to. I don't know if like the player signed up to it, for example. But I do believe that someone somewhere said, yeah, we'll go to a tournament that has $1 million.
Direct invite? Yeah.
Maybe great. I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong, but I did not hear anything about that being a malicious thing. My understanding was that was somebody somewhere accepted that, and then information came out about what this tournament was, and then
they're like, whoa.
Somebody else was like, we're not doing
it. We cannot go.
that's an insane thing to do. Yeah, no. And we also at that time talked about, well, what happens if TI's in Seattle, right? And like all these players that go to that tournament, you recently were in Russia. Surely that's going to affect your chances of getting a visa. Well, it turns out TI is not in Seattle. It's in Copenhagen.
Do you think that PGL just got like a 2-for-1 on the venue? I'll be honest,
I'm
kind of making a joke, but also kind of not making a joke. They're like,
yeah,
hey guys, we can do the Counter-Strike Major here, and hey guys, we can do TI here. Bada bing, bada boom, let's save some money. Royal Arena, here we come.
Yeah, no, I think that's a legit thing. Because I mean, PGL always, Valve always, I don't think they'll ever stop giving PGL TI. I think that is like a long-term partnership that has existed mm-hmm. for a decade or more, and will not stop anytime now. So I think yeah, that's a very real possibility.
What's exciting about, though, is Europe finally gets their TI.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, well, like, any region that gets it, it should be Western Europe.
Yeah.
Because Western Europe is a massive fan base for Dota. We had a CTI. We had a Chinese TI. We haven't had a South American TI, but we did have a South American major that didn't go particularly well. So I don't know if like Valve revisits that concept. Maybe that'll be the next one. Maybe they'll try and do that after this year. But you know,
I think you probably
well
do that in Rio,
that Western Europe
or like Sao Paulo
one.
If you do.
Yeah, sure. For sure. Hey, so the problem then is that I don't know how big Brazil is for Dota.
Yeah.
Especially anymore. Right. You could do CSGO there. Massive. Right. I don't know if Dota TI in Brazil is actually going to be that big. And then I don't know the countries in South America that Dota is big, like Peru, obviously. I don't know if how many people you would actually get to go from Peru to Brazil to attend that TI. Mm-hmm. So, not sure.
Different languages.
That's a lot of question marks.
Yeah. We being Team Liquid, we're supposed to go to the Copenhagen Major. Ideally, competitively, ideally the team goes. Spoiler alert, they didn't qualify. It was a real, genuine problem, but we won't. We'll just glaze over that real quick. But we were going to go out there to make a show for Monster, not too dissimilar to what we're doing for them for TI. So
the Monster Morning Show.
There was a plan to do one for Counter-Strike, and I booked a bunch of people to get out to Copenhagen at a specific time, and gear, and hotels, and everything. And then suddenly, we got to push the show back. Part of that being, you know, Team Liquid not qualifying, whatever. I'm not going to get into all like the gory details, right? But we have to essentially, in an alternate timeline, I would right now be in Copenhagen. Obviously not the case. If you're watching the video, I am in my sister's bedroom. But I have to cancel the hotels. I have to refund plane tickets, some of which aren't refundable. And I basically got to call the whole thing off and like just eat a bunch of money on the budget, right?
Ooh.
And then, I shit you not, less than 24 hours later, Valve goes, hey, everybody, TI's in Copenhagen. And I am malding at this point because instead of just pushing hotel dates or pushing flights, they all got shit canned. And now, we got to go back into the exact same thing, anyways.
Well, hopefully Liquid qualifies for that one.
There's no world where that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, they just requalified for Dream League. Looked really good doing it.
I mean, against like tier 2 Europe teams, let's be real, you know.
We're doing the invite system for TI? Is that what we're doing?
I believe that they said
we're doing an open qualifier again, but like we're doing invites, right?
Yeah, there's invites and open qualifiers. So I'm interested in if they publish like the math or the point system or like how it goes, because I know that like a big part of the DPC spinning up originally was to kind of demystify who was qualifying for TI, right? And
basically,
it worked really well with a couple of small exceptions that really nerdy people could fight over, but like whatever, right? But for the most part, made a lot of sense. And now we're going back to like, I don't know who's getting invited. Is this some Illuminati bullshit?
Are we gonna go back to the countdown? Remember the countdown where you would find out what teams were invited?
God.
Yeah.
We both had so much less gray hair when that countdown came out the first time, because that was like 8 years ago.
Yeah. I remember the last one of those invites was TI7, I believe, was the last one. Because that was after DC had their run in 2016 at TI6. And then Blitz joined that squad and they became Thunder Dragons or whatever the hell their name was.
They changed their name once or twice. Planet Odd?
Well, yeah, they were Planet Odd, and then that thing didn't work out, and then they became somebody else. Anyway, I remember the final invite was basically between them and Newbie, I believe. And they went to a tournament and went to a tournament in China, and they got to the grand finals, and they lost the grand finals. Possibly to Newbie, and Newbie got the last invite slot over them because of that, basically.
It's real
rough. That was like the revealed, like, this is sort of what happened, post-mortem sort of deal. So, and then they went into the American qualifier and didn't end up making through that. In fact, I think they got like third or something like that. They didn't even come close. They got bombed out real early. That was a rough one for old Blitz Dota, but now he's on a winning Team Liquid who stomped their way through the Western qualifier.
Winning again in air quotes.
Wow, getting second. You have to do a lot of winning to get second. You know,
I think
you take one loss to get second, but you have to do a lot of winning before that to get second, a lot of big
holistic winning. The record is way more W's than L's, but the L's are very untimely.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen would say that's Tiger's blood.
Yeah,
he'd say 100%. That's winning.
The last podcast that you did with Blitz was very good. Recommend for anybody who hasn't listened to the Captain Blitz podcast to go hang out and listen to Blitz talk about a little bit of how things are going with Netta with 33 and the team, post Bet Boom Dacha, pre I don't know how Dream League's gonna go. I think that reading between the lines of listening to you talk, I got the sense that Will was saying, I don't know how Dream League's gonna go, and then I watched the games and I was like, I think I might have been right about Will saying he wasn't sure how Dream League was gonna go.
Dude, I knew it this time. I knew it last time too. They're gonna bomb out of this tournament, man.
But playing qualifiers,
Liquid just can't keep the same. I mean, I guess they're like really Game of Gladiators is the only team who really did that, right? Like even Team Spirit just bombed out of the Eastern Europe qualifier. They did not even make it to the grand finals. They got third. They got beat by one win in the lower bracket final, and they lost in the upper bracket final to Navi or something like that. Semifinal. They lost in the semifinal. So they got bombed out of Eastern Europe. So they aren't even going to Dream League, right? So
which means
even
they
Team
have
Spirit
to qualify. They have to qualify for Riot then at some point, because if they're not going to play in Dream League, they're not going to have enough points. Right?
I think that depends on who gets the points at Dream League. Because I remember I was looking at the points just recently for the podcast, a show where Gaming Gladiators and Team Liquid and them are, and I'm pulling it up right now. Team Spirit is fifth.
Okay.
Right now. So they are, I think they're pretty well secured unless like a bunch of teams
below them come above them. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who all gets to go. ESL 1 Birmingham is also worth points, and I believe Spirit is going to that.
Yes.
So it's Dream League and ESL 1 Birmingham are the two events, the last events, I believe, where points for Riyadh are going to come up. Yeah, and I don't know how many teams get to Riyadh off of these points, to be honest. So I'm sure that is public knowledge. I just,
it's
not something I pay attention to. It's eight.
That makes sense. Half the teams, probably half the field.
Yeah, so they're in fourth place right now. I think they're pretty well secured.
I am going to Birmingham for anybody who wants to say hi. I think it's going to be the event that Team Liquid wins. I have this problem, Austin. I have this problem.
Okay, Joey.
No. I'll joke aside. I have this problem where I would really prefer to be with the team when they finally do it. Mm-hmm. And I am terrified at this point because I went to almost every event last year. I think I was at like mm-hmm. every one of their second places except for one of them. Where I feel like if I'm not there and they finally win, I'm going to be so mad at myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So by this logic, and because I had to change around my plane tickets because of the whole aforementioned Copenhagen situation, I will be in the United Kingdom for Birmingham in month from now.
I was there at all their second places too.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to Birmingham. So if they win that then it means that it's my fault.
What if it's you? there was a period of time, I think after the team lost in Bali, where Zai looked at me and he's like, you know, Joey, this could all be your fault. And I'm like, shit, man, you're right. And then I didn't go to the next one and they lost too. So I messaged Zai like 10 minutes after they lost and I said, not my fault.
Is that why you retired? He asked you how long you were going to be staying with Liquid. And you said, Team Liquid is my home. And he was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. I got to get to some other org. It doesn't matter how. I'll go to Tundra as a general manager if that's what it takes.
And man, I actually haven't talked to him at all about what he's been up to, but hopefully I do see him at ESL because I'm curious a little bit about how that's going for him. It might be an esports career switch success story.
Yeah, I mean Zai is one of the most
cool.
Okay, Zai is definitely not normal. I was gonna say normal, but like, you know, in a broader like that, I could just see that dude doing normal jobs.
Like he could be in an office.
I can't see a lot of Dota players doing normal jobs. I just can't.
Zai could take a Zoom call and talk about, like, whatever and not feel out of place.
Yeah, projections for quarter three. Yeah. You could see that for sure. For sure.
Did you see that the MC apologized?
I did see that. It was a good apology. It was definitely needed.
I also thought it was a good apology.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that was him apologizing under the threat of whatever contract screwing up he did by not, you know, by just dropping out of that team. Obviously, he has a contract to play and stuff like that. But it's definitely, I would give Mind Control the credit. It's also been a decent amount of time. You know, you reflect on those things. I think it was pretty clear that what he did was not okay.
A little silly.
Maybe the situation wasn't that good for him, but it couldn't have been that bad. Right.
I don't think it's that
like straight up like quitting the team right before a game. That requires some like I have moral objections with what is happening in my organization or something like that. Right. It requires a certain line to be crossed that I don't think was crossed there. So
it's a bit unhinged, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, he was mad and did something stupid. Welcome to Dota Players 101.
And welcome back to Nygma, Mr. Mind Control.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. They, I mean, they didn't qualify once again for the meta qualifier for this Dream League. They lost in a game 5 to PSG Quest, though the 3 games that they lost looked pretty one-sided to me. I was doing the Western Europe qualifier at the same time, so I couldn't exactly watch, but they looked pretty one-sided the 3 games that they lost. So
How much do you think this prolonged stretch of not doing well is really like hurting their brand? Like, I haven't dug into the numbers, but my assumption is that they're still capturing a decent amount of viewership while playing, but it's just not as viral as it used to be. I think that they're like not quite totally in the dumps, but I'm very interested.
So I think the thing about Nygma is the fact that they hold a certain region of Dota, and they bring a lot of viewers from that region, and those viewers are going to be kind of loyal, and they're going to watch no matter what, no matter how good or bad the team is doing, because of the names on the team and who they represent and all that sort of deal. So I think them losing is not that big of a deal. I think other teams winning, though, is a big deal. And I think that's actually where the problem lies. That makes any sense? I think PSG Quest and Falcons, the better those two teams do, the worse it is for Nygma, because then they're going to start taking your fans and viewers away, right? Because at some point in time, it just sucks supporting a team that loses all the time, right? It's just like, as a fan, you just, you know.
Yeah. A bunch of people live in New York and have to support the Knicks still, and I can tell you they're not happy.
Yeah, sports bandwagoning is like a massive thing, right? Because people, it's fun to support a team and have them win. It gives you a nice, you know, mood boost, energy boost. Yay, my team did it. We did it. I enjoyed part of that, right? The exact opposite, if you support a team that loses all the time, right, is it is a emotional drain on you. So it's not fun. So I think, you know, you are representing a region and a mass of viewers. And at some point in time, they're going to be like, why don't I support the guys that win? You know?
So, okay, similar conversation, different team and focus. How bad is Team Secret's losing streak and not being able to qualify for their brand? Because they don't have the same grip over a region, even though they have what is probably a much longer and more successful legacy than Nygma.
Yeah, Secret's, I don't know, Secret's gonna probably keep swapping around things. I think it's all like kind of okay for Secret, because you still have faith in like Puppy and for him to be able to like steer the ship correctly when the time comes. So qualifiers come up, there's still a chance, right? Still a chance to make it to Riyadh through qualifiers, still a chance to make it to TI through qualifiers. But yeah, if they don't make it to either one of those, then yeah, that'll be pretty rough for them. But
the interesting thing is that Secret does have a somewhat successful Valorant team and spinoff where Nygma has most of their eggs in the Dota basket. So I'm kind of interested in it from like a Dota perspective, but also in like an org fandom perspective.
Yeah. I don't really know. I don't really follow Valorant at all. So
it's silly.
I don't really know how well they're doing.
It's silly.
I did see a clip. I think it was like a League of Legends player a streamer or something, and it was just like, it was this viral clip of like, what the fuck is this? As they were watching a Valorant team fight go on. I don't even know what to call it exactly.
You call them team fights.
Do you call it a team fight? Like, what do you call it?
No, you don't call it a team fight. I don't,
because it's kind of MOBA-esque in that there are so many goddamn abilities being thrown around.
The abilities are getting
in this clip, I don't know how many people died to gunfire. You know? I feel like a lot of them were dying to just random explosions, but I don't know the game a lot. So I know there are a lot of those abilities I saw were like smokes or walls of smokes that don't actually do damage and stuff like that. But
the new hero that they just released in Valorant, mm-hmm, is a non-binary character. So okay, my Twitter feed has been insufferable for the last week. Because people are not really happy about that.
Yeah, but how is your Twitter feed insufferable?
I've been trying to use like the For You page more than just like the followers list.
Don't do that.
And this is like prime reason for me to not be doing that. Because I go over there, then I'm like, I gotta mute that.
Yeah.
Good old esports. God bless esports.
How do people care so much, man?
I don't fucking know.
That's the part that really gets me.
I don't.
I get it when the side that like wants representation cares, right? It means something to them. Yeah. Like, I get it. That makes sense. Why do you care so much on the other side?
I don't know. They're being attacked by something somewhere somehow.
Do those people not play female characters or what?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't even want to talk to him. I don't. Just.
Oh, man. Did you watch any of my you watch the Blitz podcast? Have you watched any of All Chat?
So I've been looking at some of the All Chat clips on the YouTube, but I have not been listening to full episodes. Is that a mistake? I've been saving them because I am traveling soon. So my hope is that I wanted to listen to them all like on airplanes and trains and moving around, especially because I'm going to be seeing Aiden soon. And I know he's going to be like, hey, so have you been like listening to podcasts?
Think they're worth watching. But I don't think they're necessarily anything incredible. The community has been like very supportive of it, so maybe I just have more of a pessimistic view on it. But like, I think it's good. I think it's probably my view on it would probably be it is the most interesting podcast right now because it has pro players involved, and that was the whole reason I made it that way in the first place, was because it was like the whole reason I made it in the first place. I don't know if we talked about this, but you remember the old podcast that Toby did with Sindarin and Puppy that was most often who was on it?
Yeah.
That was way back in like the beginning of Dota 2 days, right?
Yeah. Talk, we're talking Dota, like 2012, 2013 maybe.
Yeah. That was literally my inspiration for it. I was just like, there are no podcasts with active pro players on right now. And some of that is also due to like what I look at in the sports podcast field. Well, I don't consume any of these because I don't care enough about sports to actually do that sort of thing. I know of, like, for example, LeBron just had a podcast, right? He has a podcast now. And there are a lot of active pro players who have that sort of thing, and the fans really like watching that. And so that was like another reason why I was just like, yeah, it's really weird that we don't have that, because these guys definitely have the time to do so. Not a lot of time, but they do have the time to do it. It just requires somebody to actually, you know, have the connection to them,
mm-hmm,
and convince them to do it. And, you know, they'll ride along. It's just like a lot of these guys aren't going to start it themselves.
Yep.
You know,
So you've been really the driving force. Or how? So the last time we talked, you were kind of like dipping your toes into the content journey as like a, something else to help you with either like the downtime or the uncertainty between tournaments. And you know, we felt pretty excited about what you could be doing there. And I have been watching, you know, the YouTube have some hits, some stuff that's going up on Reddit and having some hits. Obviously, I think that the podcast is doing well. I mean, I actually can't say that because I don't know like what metrics you're using for well there, but
I don't really know. That's the thing. It's like every single time I drop a video, it simultaneously is like, oh, this is doing well and not well enough, you know. I'm like, on one hand, I'm like surprised. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is actually going very well, but then on the other side I'm just like, but it could be better, you know?
But do you find that motivating? Do you find that it could be better motivating?
Yes. I definitely do. Yeah, for sure. I think what I'm feeling right now is that I don't feel like anything that I've made so far has gone like truly viral in that regard. Mm-hmm. Which the numbers putting up are still very good. So for example, I have two channels. Both of them are very small. So the numbers that we're getting on these, I think, are quite good for how small the channels are. So I have like a game one that would get like hundreds of views, sometimes lower hundreds. Sometimes I have like one video that has like 92 views. Mm-hmm. And then I have this Winter Wyvern guide that I did that has 22,000 views. Right.
It's pretty good.
So it's like that did very well. And I'm happy for that, but it's not what I need it to get to. Like, obviously I need to give myself time, but like what I'm trying to get is, let me pull up Jenkins Dota YouTube. 400,000 views, right? So it's like there's a massive difference there. So like 22,000 is like fantastic for the first like hero guide video that I've done, but also I know what the top end looks like, and I'm obviously trying to skip steps. Yeah. When I know like logically I can't do that. But
and how long has Jenkins been doing that stuff for?
He's been doing it for years. I also think Jenkins is the best at this. I think he literally creates the best Dota content. Mm-hmm. Out there. Scrolling through. Yeah, I'm looking at videos from 4 years ago that are getting 200,000 views.
So, I mean, that's he spent a lot of time not just learning how the system works, but also learning and improving his own stuff and, like, building a brand for himself there. Are you looking at his metrics because you see that as, like, the top end of what's possible, or because you know...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly why I'm looking at it. And it's the same thing that when I look at All Chat, I look at We Say Things, mm-hmm. which we are already hating that number, but I think that's to be expected, to be honest. Suntsman and Sindarin are a great product and a great brand, and they built up something great, but I also don't think that you will ever be able to have the same reach that having pro players like and getting multiple pro players insight on things, you know.
Correct.
I think it's just like naturally product is set up to be the most successful because Aiden and Quinn are some of the best personalities that you have in Dota, and they're both active pro players, and then you get
active
another pro player on there.
Yeah
and it's like, yeah, so I think the ceiling is higher, right? So I don't know what exactly that ceiling looks like, because We Say Things to the most successful podcast in Dota, and then I just look at, what do? I look at other game podcasts, but like
it's hard to, I think it's really hard to tell.
It's hard to make that comparison. Mm-hmm. It's hard because there I actually had this discussion with somebody recently about this sort of thing. And the problem is that like Gota's viewership is like pretty weird in that it is not very centralized, right? Like the biggest, my biggest viewership for my channels is the United States. But we also know that that is the smallest viewership for Dota.
Correct. I'd be really interested to see where the We Say Things viewership is and if your two graphs look similar at all.
I imagine they do, because I don't think that, for example, Southeast Asia is a massive, massive fan base for Dota, right? And I would love to be able to hit that market. I just don't think that English podcast is at all on that radar. I just don't think that's the kind of content that they consume. Philippines is one of the larger regions that I have. But like as an example, I put a clip about Southeast Asia, about like some Southeast Asia beef that was happening between two players. I made a short of that and I put it on Facebook. I had it specifically made. I didn't really care about any of the other platforms. I really only made it to put it on Facebook to see what it would do, because I know a lot of C fans are on Facebook.
Yep.
And it got over 500,000 views. And
which is probably crazy for your face. Like, is that like your cap Facebook page?
Yeah, that. And that is that was a very dead Facebook. It has 20,000 followers on it, right? I only just recently started putting content onto it, and the content is like pretty hit or miss. I put my Wyvern one on there. I think that's the second most done, 140,000.
But like,
yeah,
sucks is you can't really monetize that 500,000 views on Facebook, which is like why it is kind of weird. But it's proof that there is a market there. Have you thought about getting people who speak Tagalog to just dub over your podcast?
I mean, maybe, but I kind of need the whole product because I'm putting more money into it than I'm making right now. So I kind of need the product to be more successful before I make that kind of expansion. But like, right. So like that clip does that well and it links to the YouTube video, but there is very little crossover. I looked at it and I was like, looking at the metrics, how much did I get off of Facebook? How many people came from Facebook off of that clip? And it was so small.
Yeah.
Despite the reach of the video, very small number actually came through and clicked on the link to watch the full podcast. So again, I just don't think that's the kind of concept.
I can confirm the same situation with my stuff. I can also confirm that there is more people who will click through either from TikTok or from specifically YouTube Shorts. But Facebook is like dead in terms of traffic pushing.
Yeah.
Did you put the same clip on YouTube Shorts on the page?
Yeah, I did.
And then obviously not 500,000 views.
No. No, all my YouTube short stuff does pretty poorly, to be honest. Not quite sure what to make of that. You know, it'll get like a couple hundred views, 1K, 2K, kind of caps out at like 3 or 4. But like the podcast stuff does all right, but it doesn't seem to do that well. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even do one for this last episode with Corp. I was like, wow, if it's not actually going to generate traffic to the episode and it doesn't get a whole lot of views by itself, then whatever.
Interesting. I'm not going to turn this into a work conversation, but we'll offline. I have some ideas for you. I'm going to share.
I'll take ideas.
I'm going to share some decks. I'm going to share some decks and some strategy.
But yeah, so it's so yes, the content creation stuff is going well, but you know, obviously, if I didn't want to do this in the first place. So if I'm going to do it, I want it to be as successful as it can be. And, you know, I think I created a pretty good piece of content that I really hoped would go viral. It's doing well. It just didn't really like pop off the way I wanted it to, which was the Seb tweet tier list, which I thought was a very funny idea. And I think it went very well. I think it was a great piece of content, but again, it's just, it hasn't really popped off yet. So,
yeah, it's always confusing to me what part of the Dota audience wants that versus what part of the Dota audience just wants to watch the video game. And the latter seems to be a lot bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think that's, again, another thing that like inherently makes Dota podcasts lower ceiling than other esports, which again is like kind of weird because it's like you'd think my thought process was that like all of these like Dota, the hardcore game, you know, only the smartest people play Dota. These are like stereotypes that people build up in their head, right?
Very true ones. We're really intelligent, everybody.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And they put their identity as like, I'm a Dota player. You know, I would have thought, you would think that more analysis is better, but I don't think that's actually the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think the drier stuff actually doesn't work for the Dota audience, because those people would probably rather just be playing Dota most of the time than actually like listening to analysis about it.
Unless analysis is coming from like, you know, Yatoro or something, like then people are like, yeah. Or like, you know, people want to hear Nisha talk about something. I see that, you know, with some of the stuff I make, because people are like, fuck, it's Nisha. Yeah. Like, I'm going to hear him list up like, what does he have to say about TA? Yeah. But the ability of people who can do that is so incredibly fleeting and few and far between that. Yeah. I just think that people aren't interested aside from like truly the top of pro players talking about something.
Yeah.
Which you get with Quinn and Aiden, which is why I think that, you know, not to blow too much smoke, is a recipe for success. I think that the idea that you are matching numbers with We Say Things this quickly out of the gate is incredibly encouraging, as a baseline.
Yeah, I think so too. Jenkins has given me a lot of advice and has said very similar things. He says, you know, he thinks the channel's like right on the cusp of really beginning to pop off. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't really change too much. I was going to keep doing what I was going to do anyway, but it's encouraging to hear. I found this conversation. I was showcasing, you know, Thorin has like 1 million podcasts.
Yeah, he has, I think, and I'm not making a joke, I think he has 7.
I know that. He has 7 by himself. And Dota has it is an entirety. And I'm sorry if there's like some smaller podcasts that I don't know about, but like, you know. But, like, he by himself has more podcasts than the entirety of the Dota scene.
Yeah. If you keep on going at this rate, Austin, you are going to have/host/be on a greater than 50% of the Dota podcasts.
Yeah. So I pointed to that, and I was just like, there's obviously a market for it, right? And because, like, I think podcast is one of those things that, like, The thing about it is there's a lot of people who consume Dota content but can't actually play that much because they're living their lives, they're working and stuff like that. Podcasts are like a great medium for that regard because you can listen to it while you're working, while you're at the gym, all that sort of thing. So I was like, there obviously is like room for this sort of thing, right? And like I'm looking at them and they're like all an hour to 2 hour long. They all get 20 to 30K views. And I was just like, God damn, there's like room for this sort of thing.
So much talking.
It is, yeah, a lot of talking. And we were talking about it. And this person said, well, you know, League and CSGO, they have bigger viewer bases. And I'm like, Yeah, that makes sense. But like, still, Dota's still pretty big. And this person said, yeah, except Dota people don't want to watch any serious content. They just want fart noises over dumb plays. You can only make serious content if you have like 2 to 3 specific people in the entire scene. The Seb, A.Y., Quinn type people. And then someone who gets them to say crazy shit. And they were talking about the fact that like four fifths of the Dota audience is also English is their second language. Mm-hmm. So maybe podcasts aren't the best form mm-hmm. for that group of people. Right. And then there's like the cultural split of like what people want to watch. Right. Because Dota is incredibly international. Right. It's like. If you want to hit the Dota market for English, you're trying to hit Southeast Asia, trying to hit Western Europe, trying to hit North America. Maybe you're hitting some South America. Maybe you're hitting some MENA and some India and some Africa.
What you even said is that, and we do this because I look at our own stats. We hit a bunch of Australia. I know for a fact that there is a significant number of people in Australia who listen to this.
Yeah. And then maybe you're hitting some Russia and some areas like that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just like for the English language, right? There isn't just this massive North American audience, and even the Western European audience still gets challenged by like basically everybody else internationally. So.
It is fascinating. I should we should sit down and just like go through the stats sometimes. I'm interested. I know that I'm not Jenkins, but I might be able to help you in some other ways.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
What else? Well, I mean, at the risk of talking to you for 2 hours, anything else? Anything else in your mind? Because I can keep going, but also that's because I have like 2 months of random podcast stories that I'll just pepper throughout infinity.
Dream League was good. Had fun there.
It looked like I'm always happy watching the show when I catch snippets of it because it looks like people are enjoying themselves, and that goes so far for me.
Yeah, for sure. I was doing I was on the late shift the entire time, which was not. I don't like doing the night shift, man. I can't sleep in whenever I travel. So night shift is like
that sun hits your eyes and you go for me. Whoop.
Yeah, I'm waking up every time at like 6:30. I'm like, well, I don't work for 12 hours. Fucking kill me.
Time for a nap.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, all your coworkers are the exact opposite.
Yeah, for the most part.
I'm glad Dream League was fun, though.
Yeah, it was. It's always a good time. They changed this show a little bit. There was some concerns from some of the talent about the change that they made. They definitely made, so you saw the setup. Mm-hmm. And so they made it a lot more structured. Right. It was a lot less talk show where you're sitting on a couch, you know, bullshitting and doing some improv games every once in a while. It was a lot more. We have this analyst on this segment and we have the, you know, this couch segment that is a lot shorter, a lot less bullshit. Yeah. And I thought it was I think personally, I know, like, I don't think some of the other talent like that as much because it's more work, but I do think I think adding more structure to it was good. I think it was beneficial to the show because you still have the fun moments. I think you could probably still go more, a little bit less structure, but I think it was the right idea, personally.
Yeah, and I am somebody who is less of a fan of the improv games and the red button and all of everything that mm-hmm. comes with that. But that's probably just because I'm, and forgive me for using the word, can be a little sensitive to the cringe.
What do you mean? What do you mean you could be sensitive to the cringe?
I mean, when I'm doing it, it's fine. But when other people are doing
it. Okay, when you're doing it. Okay, so they're just not doing the cringe correctly. Is that it? Is that it, Joey?
You're like, hey, everybody, I got notes for you, Avery. Lean
this
in
harder.
This
isn't pre-scripted cringe. This is improv cringe, and that's bad.
Yeah, there's, you know, I understand the note that you were giving me. Okay, I'm just saying, I'm just throwing it out there. Just, you know, I'm a little sensitive.
So you're gonna be working Copenhagen TI or what?
I'll be there in some way.
Okay.
Maybe Crownfall will come out before then. Yes or no? Do you think it will?
New fucking Crownfall. Well, they gave us a date, you know, mid April.
They gave us a mid-April range.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I.
What are you gonna expect? It's Valve time.
Okay. Small soapbox. I think, and maybe this is giving way too much credit to people who work in that building with the big red wheelie thing, that call themselves Valve. I think that people are like, hey, man, they said they were going to deliver so much stuff. That's why they're not doing this. That's why they're not doing that. And I agree with that perspective. I think that expectations were not set correctly. But I have a theory that they are like recovering from burnout. And they are trying to, like, reignite some Dota stuff. And I think that's why it's taken longer. Like, if I'm thinking about it from, like, a work office perspective and kind of understanding that Valve doesn't just hire people to do shit, I think that they overpromised and realized that they were just really crispy. And those crispy people are still doing this and trying to, like, work through burnout. Which, you know,
you can't complain about burnout and make millions of dollars, right? That's my dude. Someone at Valve, I hope they didn't hear that.
Man, I'm so tired. I'm so tired counting on my money.
I have the same. Listen, I apply that same philosophy to myself and my colleagues. Mm-hmm. Right? I do not like it. When there's an acceptable amount of complaining, right? Mm-hmm. There's a general bonding complaining, and then there's like going too far with it and just being miserable and making other people miserable around you. Mm-hmm. And I don't stand for that because motherfuckers are our job. We make too much money and our job is too easy for anybody to whine too much, you know? So I apply that to myself too. Just saying.
I know you do. I think that Crownfall will probably be good. I think that Valve probably spent a year working through burnout. I think that I would probably wish they just hired people who weren't burnt out.
You're working through burnout?
Yeah.
You can't just say that. Take a weekend to work through burnout. What the fuck do you mean?
Hey, man, they got to fix Counter-Strike. They're working to fix Counter-Strike, probably. Have you seen the shit going on with the Major?
Okay, point me to the programmer who's working on the Dota team and the CS2 team at the same time.
Right? I would love to have a
beer with
them.
Maybe they exist. Yeah. I don't know, but I have no idea. But I'll get a little bit more inflammatory, but with a different point. Mm-hmm. Joey, we agreed that, like, Valve said these things, and, you know, we just gotta wait. We agree with the gripes and stuff like that, but, like, really, we can't really judge until we see Crownfall, right? Because, like, that's gonna be the big content. We won't really be able to judge what we lost on, like, the loss of hats and battle pass and whatever, and, like, what we gained until we see Crownfall. We were saying that 2.5 months ago.
Yeah, that is where we left the conversation. And in my mind, we were just waiting.
I'm just saying, we're still waiting. We're still waiting for the content. We're still being like, well, we can't make that judgment yet until we see the patch. I'm just saying, like, the more time goes by, like, the bigger the patch has to be, you know?
Yeah, they're going to be fucking... I will stand on my platform and say that I am optimistic. I am optimistic.
I'm not that optimistic, but then again, I don't think I really care that much. Like, I want a new patch and that sort of thing. Because I am not playing any Dota right now. I'll get back to it. Now that I know that Crownfall wasn't right around the corner, I was just going to wait until Crownfall was here. And then I was going to stream and play a bunch of Dota and all that sort of
jazz. What are you going to do with 3 weeks?
Yeah, now I was like, well, there's no way I'm just going to not play Dota and not stream for 3 weeks. I've literally never done that outside of being in the military. So, like, and that's kind of like a forced situation. So, you know, if I have free will, I'm not going to go that long without playing Dota. So I'm going to get back into it soon. I'll start streaming again soon.
But, what have you been playing, though? Are you playing, like, any Blarto?
Balatro.
There we go. I'm dyslexic.
Yeah.
Forgive me.
Yeah. Dude, that game fucking swept through the Dream League camp, man.
I'd assume so.
A couple people came with that game already played, like Avery. And then it took over the entire fucking green room.
Everybody has their switch, like, between games. You're like going down, you're like playing poker, looking up at the game, then going down and playing poker.
Yeah, kind of. That's kind of how it went. Avery and I have played a lot of Helldivers together. I've put 83 hours in that game.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Yeah, a decent amount of that is actually playing it. So we were playing at Dream League. We've been playing since I got back. We were playing before Dream League and stuff like that. So, yeah, with that great game. Fucking solid game. Everything that all the praise you hear about it, it's all on point.
You're not like a Pow World person, though. I imagine your wife might have been.
Yes, she is a Pow World person. I definitely am not a crafter,
dude. No. Yeah, me no, too. I played. I actually like 100%ed the new Yakuza game, and that was like 100 hours.
Okay,
and I've been playing. I'm almost done with Persona 3 Reloaded, which is like another 80 hours. So I have been, since the last time I properly talked to you, fully JRPG pilled. Like,
have you found yourself making random sound effects when you're like surprised or disappointed?
I go, oh! All the time, yes.
Oh, what?
No. Yeah. So that's what I've been doing.
That's good. Are you behind on your like to-do list of media consumption because you've been working so much?
I'm pretty current because I have been forcing myself to kind of use some of that to decompress. So and that kind of runs the spectrum, like, right? Like, so the video games have been kind of problematic. Like, I played all of that Yakuza in like a week and a half to an unhealthy amount. Like, I had two jobs. Mm-hmm. I had my job and then I had playing Like a Dragon, which, by the way, great game. Everybody totally fucking recommend it. Probably the best one in the series. Definitely the best one in the series. Neither here nor there. But like, I've been much more casual with TV because I've been doing a lot of like TV and anime and cardio combining. So that's been good. I watched the latest season of True Detective. If anybody wants to talk to me about them, the Discord server, it is the worst thing ever.
Okay.
Do not watch it, Austin. It is so bad.
Okay.
I just got through watching all the stuff from the Oscars the last week because, like, I didn't see some of the movies. Like, I didn't see Oppenheimer and a couple of other things. So I powered through a bunch of movies recently.
I think I made some sort of cardinal sin.
What's that?
I watched Oppenheimer on a plane.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like, everyone was like, oh, you have to see it on IMAX and stuff like that. I'm like, I'm not going to do
Did
that.
Did you watch it on your phone or, like, on the seat back screen?
On the seat back screen.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Like, you know, man, I Ellie doesn't want to watch that movie. I'm not going to the movie theater by myself. I'm fine watching it on the back of a plane seat. That's perfectly fine with me. I'm okay with that.
I split the difference to watch it on my television. So do you think that was the best movie last year?
I don't watch that many movies,
okay,
to be honest. I watch a lot more TV. I don't watch that many movies. We don't go to the movie theater that often, probably like 4 or 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. It was a good movie. It wasn't, I think you put it in like B or C, for your tier list.
I would probably agree with that. High C, low B, basically. It's like on the cusp.
That's fine with me. Yeah. It didn't like blow me away or anything, but like, yeah, it was a good movie.
I would encourage you and Ellie, I think that it's on Hulu now, to watch Anatomy of a Fall.
Okay.
And anybody else who has an opinion and also wants to talk about this in Discord about movies in the Oscars last year, Anatomy of a Fall was my favorite movie from last year, and it just started streaming on Hulu. About 60% of the movie is in French and subtitled, if that's a problem for anybody. But not the whole thing. It's
a real pretentious, real film.
No. Okay,
it's not a movie. It's a film.
It did come out of Cannes, but like it's really. I think it's the best thing that came out like there.
Listen, if I see it on the list on an airplane at some point, I'll definitely give it a watch.
Yeah,
I promise.
You should. You'd have a good time. Let's call it there. So next, a week from today is Easter, which is probably not relevant to a bunch of people, but a week from today I get on an airplane and I am going to be in Europe for the entire month of April. So if we do a show, I will do it from the from the Team Liquid streaming pods over there.
Okay. Well, I ain't doing shit until like May or something like that. So
we're gonna have very different Aprils.
Yeah. I'm going to be streaming and doing YouTube content, I believe.
Fuck yeah. Well, I hope that I genuinely, truly, from the bottom of my heart, hope that you are the reason that Team Liquid didn't win any of those trophies. See everybody at Birmingham.
No, you don't want that to be me. I'll be there at Copenhagen.
No!